from deep inside your radio.
Well, I think he was truncated, don't you? Ladies and gentlemen, this is the second and final year in rebuke edition of this broadcast. And it's cold in here. Can you hear? You'll hear the sort of the leather sound as I move around because I'm wearing my comfy jacket. But that's neither here nor there. Well, it is here. It is here, not there. But news of the new F-bomb, ladies and gentlemen, first and foremost, the new F-bomb foreclosure. A circuit court judge in Sarasota, Florida, has found one of the largest banks in the country in contempt of court. Imagine that. A bank. They're usually so nice. This over a foreclosure case that has dragged through the system for several years. Attorneys for Dimitri Jansen, doesn't sound like an American name to me, a school teacher whose former home in Northport, Florida, is in foreclosure, said the contempt order against U.S. Bank is unprecedented. I guess that bank doesn't have a president. Jansen says his mother's name was mistakenly added to the mortgage he obtained in 2006. The bank has ignored requests to remove her name from the foreclosure documents and thus wrecked her credit history, and that the bank, on the basis of her name not being on the short sale documents, has held up a pending short sale of the house in question. Another Sarasota judge, apparently frustrated with the same bank, had ordered the bank's president to be in court on Friday. The bank instead sent a senior representative who declined to comment. Although the bank has been held in civil contempt, it's unclear what, if any, sanctions the bank will face at the court's next hearing in February. It's a case, obviously, from the brief description I gave you of paperwork mistakes, which somehow always inure to the benefit of the bank. Isn't that a nutty coincidence? Isn't that wild? By the way, why the president of U.S. Bank failed to appear as ordered in court? In documents, the bank argued it would be, quote, logistically impossible for the president to appear in court. Apparently, he has no corporeal existence. And Dateline Odessa, Florida, because the ground zero of the new F-bomb is Florida. 2 years after he died of cancer, Dorothy Jackson's late husband received a letter from the bank. Dear David A. Jackson, deceased, the letter said. It was from Wells Fargo, and specifically a home preservation specialist at Wells Fargo. It offered advice if Jackson had, quote, a change in circumstances, unquote. The bank said it was open to helping the widow's late husband of five decades, a retired Tampa police sergeant whose death kept his widow from making her monthly payments of more than $2,000. But the bank refused to talk to her. She was told her attempts to shrink her payments would go nowhere. The reason, nearly a decade earlier, though both she and her husband were named on the home's title, only the husband signed the loan. A small paperwork problem for her, you see, when it inures to the bank's benefit, really. Then she's not the only widow who faces this seemingly insurmountable snare. The bank would not let her take over the loan unless its payments were up to date, but be able to afford that. Jackson, the widow, Dorothy, needed different loan terms, which the bank would not provide unless she took over the loan, you see. And her name wasn't on the document, and her husband was dead, and they are writing to him as Mr. Deceased. Yes, it is the new F-bomb. It is foreclosure. We will be reviewing, well, not reviewing, rebuking the year just past, comedically speaking, moments from now here on Hello, Welcome to the Show.
Thank you.
from Chile, New Orleans, Louisiana. From right beside Lake Pontchartrain, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. And the year began with an off, with, I guess it's fair to say at this point in time, was a freak show known as the Republican primary battle. It was extended beyond all reasonable length by the decision of the cable news channels to sponsor a series of debates, among them beginning 18 months before the election. Thank you for that. Thank you for making the campaign longer and for making incredible candidates seem credible, at least to viewers of your channels, for a scary few weeks or months. One of the least credible in certain ways of the candidates in the race, a certain Mr. Gingrich, well, he just had some marital baggage, I think is the nicest way to describe that, which is different, I guess, from the brain baggage that some of the others had. But he had marital baggage, and early in the year, after a first few primaries, he decided that everybody else was right and was fixing to pull out. A great moment in
2012, the year in rebuke.
You ready, honey?
Just finishing up the dramatically final paragraph.
I know, dear, but I've got nails at 3.
Okay. All right, it's on the monitor. You got the camera switched on?
You know, I think I just might have. I've learned something from our filmmaking.
Okay. Ready. Profoundly ready.
And go.
You mean action?
Whatever.
17 months ago, I embarked on a remarkably different kind of presidential campaign. A campaign of bold ideas, of radically inventive solutions.
Honey?
Of distinctively visionary...
Honey, cut that paragraph.
But I'm just asserting my transformative historical character.
We know it, and we love it. But it's like saying you were too great to win.
And? All right, don't give me that look. It's cut.
Thank you.
Today, I embark on a new chapter in that journey.
Only books have chapters.
Journeys can have metaphorical chapters. Just will you let me...
Sorry.
A chapter which, in its own way, is remarkably dramatic as well as dramatically remarkable.
Just trying to help.
Today, I am suspending my candidacy for the presidency of the United States and endorsing Mitt Romney for the Republican nomination.
Just a note.
Mm-hmm.
Try not to look so sad when you're saying that.
That was my gravitas look.
That was your sad look.
Okay. But our journey to Tampa is not over. Between now and the convention, I will continue to speak out for bold solutions, although you may not see it on television.
Oh, that comes off as bitter.
Well, it's the truth. Once I'm not a candidate, I'll have to get bitten by another penguin to get any TV coverage.
All right.
We will continue on to Tampa, as I've always pledged, although I meant it differently, because the profoundly important work of writing our party's platform will take place there. Because the eyes of the nation will be focused there. And because many of you who have helped this campaign will be hopefully helping us to retire our debt by bringing some of your resources there.
Didn't you have money in the last draft, not resources?
Yeah, I know. It sounded too literal. I think it was Churchill who said, "We borrow in prose, but we pay back in poetry."
Is that in the speech?
No, that's me talking to you. I'm going to be depending on all of you to join us in making sure Governor Romney centers his campaign around bold solutions, even though he himself may not ever have even envisioned them.
Oh, I thought you were taking that out. It sounds so very petty.
Fine. Right, but then it sounds like I'm saying he has bold solutions.
You're saying you're bringing your brand, bold solutions, to his brand, which is winner.
Okay. But I'm not actually saying that. I mean, I'm literally not calling him a winner.
That's fine. Just remember, you're being Big Newt.
Right. Big Newt.
Big Newt.
Finally, I want to thank all the people who worked so hard in this campaign after the professionals and the insiders and the establishment abandon us.
No. Just a period after this campaign.
We tried to run a different kind of campaign, and we did. The ideas we persistently showcased live on in Callista's and my books and films. And every time you buy one or more of them, you not only help spread dramatically empowering ideas, you help us pay for this campaign, because we still have many miles to go before Tampa, and many zoos yet to visit.
You're not losing the zoo line.
The campaign kids thought it sounded startlingly self-deprecatory and profoundly cool.
Okay, you want to watch it back?
Hold on, not finished. Remember, we are all joined together in a historically crucial movement to make Barack Obama a one-term president and to build a moon base.
No moon base, Nudie.
Okay. So, what do you think?
I'm so very proud of you.
Thanks.
You're the best little Nudie ever.
No.
Yes, you are. Oops, late for nails. Kiss, kiss.
Times are tough. Money's hard to come by. And you have expenses that are fundamentally difficult to meet. Oh, sure, you could go to a bank, but thanks to obscenely grotesque overregulation, they won't lend to you. You need a bold new answer. Hi, I'm Newt Gingrich, and I'm visionary enough to offer you a radically simple solution to your money problems. How would you like to have a list of some of the world's most generous people at your fingertips? People ready to help you with your money problems. People who could be just a phone call away.
Hello?
Hi, it's Newt calling.
Oh, how can I help?
Well, Callie and I need a new sun awning for the back porch. Might be a grand.
Oh, that's an awful lot for an awning.
Well, you can have naming rights.
You've got a deal.
It can be just that dramatically simple. But until now, lists of such generous folks weren't available to people like you and me. Except for me. Now, thanks to me, they are. You can choose from small donors if you need help with things like car payments or dental bills. Or, if you're facing historically large obligations on your home or business, choose our large donor list. These are heavy hitters, big spenders, and they're remarkably ready to hear what you need. But lists like these can't remain publicly available for long. This special offer must expire before our donors do. And if you order before midnight tomorrow, you'll get as a free bonus our profoundly exclusive list of pro-liquid Las Vegas casino mogul donors. It's not a long list, but it's strategically potent. One call could keep you in the losing battle of your choice for weeks. So act now. Callie and I are waiting for your call. Literally.
Call 1-888-NEWTS-LIST. If you're satisfied, pay in one monthly payment. If for any reason Newt's List fails to thrill you, pay sooner. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, safe, too cheap to meet. Cheap, same, too safe to meet. Save, same, too safe to meet.
Addy, the Atom?
Yes, sir.
You got big New Year's Eve plans?
Yeah. Gonna have my electrons spin in reverse motion.
Wow, that sounds like a thrill.
It could screw me up.
All right, we'll be looking for that. Tanks designed to hold radioactive filtrate at the Fukushima #1 nuclear plant are proving too fragile to be used. And the operator has announced a further delay in starting up the machinery that cleans contaminated water. You see, ladies and gentlemen, the process was to begin operation at the plant, according to Asahi Shimbun, in September. They're unable to predict when the equipment may finally come online. The vessels are hoisted and lowered as they're filled and replaced by empty containers. In the event of an accident, they need to be strong enough to withstand a fall without releasing their radioactive contents. TEPCO confirms that the vessels could sustain a fall from a height of 6 meters in an upright position, but tests found the tanks were breaking and spilling their contents when dropped from a height of only 3 meters in an upside-down position. The work goes on, you see. But, meanwhile...
Meanwhile, everything's good?
Yeah, meanwhile, everything's good. Children play on a trampoline. I'll read the story rather than the photo caption now for you. While dozens of indoor playgrounds for children have been built in Phuc following the outbreak of the nuclear crisis, an increasing number of children are getting fat, mainly because of a lack of exercise over fears of radiation exposure. This according to a survey released by the Ministry of Education, Culture, Sports, Science, and Technology on Christmas Day.
Well, they got so much to take care of, they work on Christmas, huh?
That's right. Indoor playgrounds have so far been built at 37 locations in 18 municipalities in Phuc in an effort to protect children from radiation released from you-know-what. Pediatrician Shintaro Kikuchi says the opportunities for children to use indoor playgrounds are limited because of the need to travel to visit them and restrictions on time. The environment for children to do exercise is a far cry from what it was before the nuclear accident, in which children could play freely outdoors.
Well, so we've created fat kids. So what?
Excellent. Excellent point. News of the Atom, clean, cheap, too fat to meter. And Happy New Year, Addie. Happy spinning.
Thank you.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the Army Corps of Engineers. The Let Us Try people. Oh, it's me that's clicking. I was just trying to... I don't know if you hear it, but I heard it. It's me doing something. Yeah. An area that just a week ago was lush habitat in the Sepulveda Basin, in the wild side of the Sepulveda Basin, in the San Fernando Valley of Los Angeles. Imagine, there's something wild there. This was home to one of the most diverse bird populations in Southern California. That area has been reduced to dirt and broken limbs by your friends and mine, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. This is from the L.A. Dog Trainer. Audubon Society members stumbled upon the barren landscape last weekend during their annual Christmas bird count. Now they're calling for an investigation into the loss of 43 acres of cottonwood and willow groves, undergrowth and marshes that had maintained a rich inventory of mammals, reptiles, and 250 species of birds. Much of the area's vegetation had been planted in the 1980s, part of an Army Corps project that turned that portion of the L.A. River floodplain into a wildlife preserve, you see. But that was decades ago. Trying to reclaim a river that had been turned into a concrete ditch by the L.A. Corps of Engineers decades before that. In 2010, the preserve had been reclassified as a, and this is language only the Army Corps of Engineers, ladies and gentlemen, could come up with, a vegetation management area, with a new five-year mission of replacing trees and shrubs with native grasses, the purpose to improve access for Army Corps staffers and discourage crime in an area plagued by sex for drugs encampments. Hey, sounds like win-win. The Army Corps declared that an environmental impact report on that effort was not necessary because it would not significantly disturb wildlife and habitat. Au contraire, mon frère. Nearly all of the vegetation, native and non-native, had been removed. There's your habitat, right there. Decomposed granite trails, signs, stone structures, and other improvements bought and installed with public money had been plowed under. Army Corps Deputy District Commander Alexander DeRaney acknowledged that, quote, somehow we did not clearly communicate to environmentalists and community groups the revised plan for the area. He added the Corps would, quote, make the process more transparent in the future, next time we destroy stuff. The conservation chairman of the San Fernando Valley Audubon Society claims the Corps had misrepresented its intent all along. Environmental stewardship is critical for us, said DeRaney, but assuring public safety and access to infrastructure designed to deal with flooding are paramount. So, let us try to destroy the lovely little wildlife preserve we built. Because, you see, we get money for building it. We get money for destroying it. Again, it's win-win. The Let Us Try people, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Ladies and gentlemen, we look back on a year in which a certain video that made certain derogatory claims about a certain religion inflamed a certain population. We'll look back on it right now. because this is the year in rebuke.
A secretive film creates a religious uproar, and it's not the one you've heard about.
And Extra Access Tonight's special report for mid-September 2012.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mike DeVere.
And I'm Pat Mungo. Detoxed again.
In the movie business, controversy is usually good news. It means more business.
But this week, a sneak peek at what may be a controversial new film has got many fundamentalists up in arms. Literally.
Extra Access Tonight has pieced together from parts of the story reported on other TV shows most of what we know about this still-developing story. It begins with a thumb drive that showed up last week in some West Texas churches.
In my morning mail, along with free will gifts and offerings from my radio ministry, was this little bitty drive, was what my assistant Gail called it. She put it in her computer, and for the next 4.5 minutes, we couldn't believe how shocked we continued to be. So that night, we fellowshiped with some of our brethren in the leadership of the born-again community, and by 9:15, we had decided to join together, despite our occasional doctrinal differences, to fight back against this evil, because that's what free will gifts and offerings are for.
The evil Reverend Pete Jeter saw was a teaser trailer for Mad Men of God, which portrays Jesus Christ as a 1950s-era advertising genius alive in Roman times. In the trailer, he alternates between creating campaigns for his hot new religion and having equally hot campaigns between the sheets.
Here's what we ran up the flagpole. Heavenly Father, right now my testament is skewing heavily female. Some of the apostles think we need to tweak the optics. Me, I think it's a heck of a blessing.
What I was trying to do was update the classic 1920s book, The Man Nobody Knows.
Film producer Ibrahim Al-Fahari. His voice has been disguised by too much yelling.
About Jesus as an ad salesman. We had wealthy investors from Abu Dhabi who wanted to tell the truth about Christianity. We shot it over a six-month period with a cast of over 100. That thumb drive, which contains just a piece of the rough cut, somehow escaped from the edit facility in 29 Palms. This was not our plan. Our plan was for a big premiere, complete with Joan Rivers being catty.
But once word got out through church Facebook pages about the film and its financing, outrage started spreading faster than hot syrup on a half stack.
Since there are no consulates from Abu Dhabi or other Gulf Emirates in Texas, protests took other forms. In Midland, Guy Dibbler, who had pleaded guilty to stink bombing a Planned Parenthood clinic, led a series of round-the-clock vigils, some of which turned nasty, at the homes of local Arabs, Turks, Sikhs, and Mexicans.
We started real peaceful-like, but turns out I had some stink juice left over from the other operation. So we bombed a couple of falafel stands. Mexicans, they were customers at the stands at the time. That was just a happy accident.
Back in Hollywood, stories about the making and makers of Mad Men of God were leaking out. Abby Gantett is a veteran actress in the adult film industry.
We all feel betrayed by Mr. Al-Farahi. First of all, it turns out his name is really Al-Zahiri. Worse, we all hired on to do a very different movie, a softcore takeoff on Mad Men called Mad Babes. Nothing about religion or Jesus or anything. He was just an ad man in the desert with an enormous, I guess you on TV you're supposed to call it, an enormous endowment.
I call it my converter.
You can save me anytime, mister.
You can call me Master.
They dubbed all the religious dialogue in during lunch the day we shot it. And I think it gives the whole, as I like to call it, San Fernando Valley a bad name.
Now, in the latest twist, it turns out that Ibrahim Al-Zahiri is really the son of billionaire Russian oligarch Nikolai Berezhevsky. There were internet rumors that he made the porn film to settle a large gambling debt. What happened then is still a mystery.
What isn't a mystery is the continued outrage of many Southern Christians. Again, activist Guy Dibbler.
Hell, if the Lord tells me I got to move on up to another level and start firebombing the vehicles of visiting Russian dignitaries, I'll do it. He's the shepherd. I'm only one flocker.
We'll keep on this story until more photos of naked English royalty emerge.
That wraps it for this edition, but Inside Extra Access tonight comes rolling back tomorrow with the results of our latest IEAT poll.
We asked you how you like 3D movies, and the results will have you punching yourself straight in the face.
Till then, I'm Mike DeVere.
And I'm Pat Mungo. So long from Culver City.
Tomorrow, I don't have to use my head. I got a small day tomorrow. I can sleep the day away, and it won't cause too much sorrow. Not tomorrow. So tonight, this mouse will play. He's got a small day tomorrow. Now all the big wheels with all their big deals are gonna need their sleep. But I'm a dropout who'd rather cop out than run with all the sheep. Honey child, tonight's the night, and there's a car I can borrow till tomorrow. We can swing to broad daylight. I got a small day tomorrow. Have to play it cool. I got a small day tomorrow, small day tomorrow. I'm not trying to play the fool. I've got a small day tomorrow. I keep open all night long. Don't have to rise up tomorrow. Not tomorrow. People tell me that it's wrong. Perhaps I'll wise up tomorrow. Now all the big wheels with all the big deals are gonna need their sleep. But I'm a dropper who'd rather cop. Honey child, tonight's the night, and there's a car I can borrow till tomorrow. We can swing right out of sight. We've got a long night and a small day tomorrow. Small day tomorrow, small day tomorrow. I don't have to go to bed.
From New Orleans, this is Le Show. This is the year in rebuke, 2012, the year when a sex scandal enveloped momentarily the United States Secret Service.
By day, I'm ready to take a bullet from my leader.
By night, I'm ready to fight the foreigners who try to overcharge hardworking Americans.
Today's Secret Service
born ready.
I'll sacrifice my life to keep the peace.
But I'll never sacrifice a peace.
Day or night, today's Secret Service. Protecting one body, enjoying many. To get in on the action, visit serviceme.gov.
And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Social media, as we keep learning in this department of the broadcast, can be a dangerous place to air your feelings. Keep it light, keep it jokey, keep it trivial, won't you? Especially if you're a young college athlete. Two USC football players, USC, oh sorry, recently received plenty of backlash after they used Twitter to bash the city of El Paso, Texas, only to have to apologize via the same medium. The latest incident occurred this week when Leonard Williams, a freshman defensive tackle for the USC Trojans, apologized to El Pasoans, El Pasoitos, after he used an expletive to describe the city the day before. Less than a month ago, freshman linebacker Tony Burnett had to issue an apology after trashing El Paso. USC is in El Paso to play Georgia Tech in the Hyundai Sun Bowl, or the Sunday Hun Bowl, if there are some Huns available. It's become a PR nightmare for USC, says Jimmy Sanderson, an assistant professor in the Department of Communication Studies at Clemson. I think there's an overall lack of responsibility. USC players learning that the school had accepted an invitation to the Sun Bowl to play Georgia Tech were followed by Burnett tweeting, Georgia Tech, El Paso, Texas, New Year's Eve, FML. The abbreviation roughly translates into screw my life. When his tweet caught the attention of El Pasoans, El Pasoitos, and the media, he deleted it and sent out an apology. Then William's tweet, that was Burnett's tweet. William's tweet, out here in El Paso, as they arrived, expletive city, but glad I can enjoy this moment with the USC family. By Thursday morning, Williams had deleted his tweet and gone on to apologize. Sorry about what I said last night. It came out wrong. I'm grateful to be part of this bowl. I'm grateful to be part of this bowl, ladies and gentlemen, and looking forward to a great game. I was saying I'm just proud to be here with my family. Williams also apologized. Sorry, Williams also responded to individuals apologizing and trying to explain his mistake and his joy at being in this bowl. And the Anamutsun tribal band of Ohlone Indians, received a formal apology from the Diocese of Monterey, this is in Central California, for abuses of their people, the Indian people in that particular tribe, dating back to 1797 and the Spanish colonization of Central California. Bishop Richard Garcia asked for forgiveness during a mass of reconciliation at Mission San Juan Bautista, one of many missions where Native Americans endured atrocities that included rape, slavery, cultural genocide, broken treaties, disease, and bounties placed on the heads of tribe members. Won't you visit a mission today? The events which nearly destroyed the Mutsun culture had never officially been acknowledged by the Catholic Church. But hey, what's the rush? This was 1797. Brothers and sisters, I ask for forgiveness for the times when individuals and communities of our Catholic Church have disrespected you, have abused you, and I apologize, the bishop said in a nearly 10-minute address to a large audience at the church, many of whom were Native American. Valentin Lopez, chairman of the Anamutsun, accepted the apology, then exchanged gifts and an emotional hug with the bishop. He called the event significant and important to the tribe. Prior to this massive reconciliation, the Catholic Church has never really acknowledged, recognized, or accepted any responsibility for what happened at the missions, Lopez said. One thing we know is that our people need to heal from the damage that was done to our ancestors of seven generations during mission times, Mexican times, and early American times, through abuses such as indentured servitude, extermination, and legalized kidnapping. This apology from the bishop is a big step toward allowing us to heal, unquote. Get over it, babe. Quote, to me, this apology means that the missions have finally come around to accept the wrongdoing treatment of the Indian people, says Marvin Marine, a Native American activist from Sacramento. There are 19,000 Ama Mutsum people buried at the mission, San Juan Batista in Central California. They are the people who built the mission, and they are the people who suffered the most, says Marine. What's happening today is just a small part of what finally is going to start happening to make amends to the Indian people. Bishop Garcia's apology was the second issued to Northern California's Native Americans by the Catholic Church. We await some to Southern Californians, where other missions are located. And make that part of your mission tour this year, won't you? Just, you know, in case the church forgets to, you go and apologize to them. And then, you know, buy some stuff. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. This is the year in rebuke, a year in which many important developments occurred in our war in Afghanistan. Progress? Sure. That's what we've been told. And we've been told by no better source than the president of the country and his brother.
From Afghanistan Public Radio, where the pledge drive never ends.
From the newly fortified presidential palace in downtown Kabul, where even the explosive devices are improvised. I'm Mahmoud.
And I'm Hamid. We're Kash and Ash, the Fork It Over brothers. Welcome to another edition of Cars I Talk. Today's show comes to you with the help of Pakistan, the prestige address for insurgents worldwide.
But hey, we don't have to worry about them, my older brother.
No, we will not be alone in this treacherous neighborhood with Iranians on one side, Russians on another.
And the best Indian restaurants in the world, just a short 8-hour jeep ride away. Speaking of the neighborhood, listeners have probably noticed that almost all Afghan men wear beards.
That's true.
They may have wondered whether it's some kind of religious thing.
Mm-hmm. It's a good question.
Of course. The real reason is if you try to shave, the electricity cuts out before you're halfway through.
Yeah, and then you've got almost all Afghan men wearing half beards. But, you know, we could go on like this until we get sick of us.
Don't laugh. It's already happened.
Don't tell me don't laugh. It's in the format. But we have an actual guest on today's program in our actual studio.
That's right. All of a sudden, we're like the Hindu Kush home companion.
He flew here earlier this week on a secret, unannounced visit. He went back home to do some governing and some campaigning. And now he's flown back to be our unannounced guest. President Barack Obama, welcome to Cars I Talk.
Well, thanks, Hamid. I came back because I want to learn how not to raise money like your brother.
And how not to govern like my brother.
I do have to say, the studio seems kind of tiny. The exterior of the building looks much bigger.
Yes, that's 20 feet of blast wall.
But we're very grateful for your agreeing with my brother to end the war on the long track.
Mm-hmm. I think you mean the very long track.
Yes, my friend, with the full knowledge that our American brothers will be here for another 12 years, I think we can have the certainty we need for Afghan free enterprise to flourish.
Well, I certainly hope so.
Oh, yes, I've gotten 3 more orders for Toyota Tundras just since the agreement was signed.
Wow. Well, that's great.
Unfortunately, the orders are from the Taliban, but hey, their money is as bad as anyone else's.
seriously, Hamid, I'm here to say that we're not leaving you this time. Mm-hmm. We're not abandoning you. Mm-hmm. We're living up to our responsibilities, and we expect
that we won't kill you all.
That would be nice.
Hello, you're on Cars I Talk with President Obama.
Hello, Mr. President. This is Salahuddin, first-time caller. First name caller.
Hey, Salahuddin. Who do you like in the NBA final?
Well, Miami looks unbeatable in the East, but sorry, I need to stay on topic. There's a man with a gun at my head.
Okay, well then we'll take a rain check on who you like in the West. What's your question?
Well, this is for Mahmoud, really, but I'm just to assume, am I not, that the agreement for the Americans to stay means that our transportation routes for our almonds will continue to be protected?
I believe it's safe to say that.
I know it's safe to say that, but is it safe for our almonds to be transported as usual?
Well, I don't know specifically about almonds.
They're not really talking about almonds.
I understand. But the cornerstone of this agreement is our reliance on a stronger and more reliable Afghan Army police force.
You are kidding, right?
Well, now you've heard the jokes on this show. You must know we're never kidding. Thanks for the call. Mr. President, I know you can't stay much longer due to the fact that once people know you're here, you have to leave. But
well, I just want to take the opportunity to say that programs like this are such a great example.
There are no other programs like this. This is the only one like this.
All right, then. This program is such a great example of the free and open society which we're trying to help you build. I don't think the Taliban leaders would go on the radio and just put any callers on the air.
Oh, no, they certainly wouldn't.
It would be stupid for them to do so.
Yes. That's why we have screeners and plants.
Well, they're doing a great job. Thanks, fellas.
Goodbye, Mr. President. No more calls, please. The phone lines have been ripped out for security reasons.
Yes, of course, you can take those headphones with you. You paid for them.
We had help for today's Cars I Talk from the Nation Building Foundation. When you can't build homes, build nations.
Legal services for Cars I Talk from the law firm of Ketchum and Lucum.
I'm Hamid. Join me and my younger and more businesslike brother Mahmoud next time for another edition of Cars I Talk.
This is APR, Afghanistan Public Radio.
And this year saw a major upsurge in violence, in attacks, and in killings of members of the international force, the Americans and some Brits and some European troops as well, by members of the Afghan military and police forces. Killings that were referred to because the international troops were apparently some blue on their uniforms and the Afghan army is in green. The killings are referred to now colloquially, because they've happened so frequently this year, as green on blue.
Green on blue, Kelly on aqua, green on blue, inside game, me on you, not even a fatwa, which is brew. So glad you came. No one knew how this could happen. War so new. A doctrine of one. Green on blue. Is this how it ends up? Blue withdraws. Spin unspun.
Green on blue, why do they hate us? Green on blue, Afghans on Yanks, we're so through. Don't tell Petraeus. Green on blue, but where's the thanks? Lost a slew of brothers and sisters, saving folks who don't want to be saved. One thing's true, we've learned our lesson. Blue gets to leave, green has to stay. Green on blue, not what was promised.
say it's meth.
Commies and Brits,
they learned it the hard way.
History has the last little laugh.
And this year, two Americans who never really leave the stage were back pretty close to the center for a good part of the year. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton engaged in a lot of diplomacy to great effect, and then found herself taking responsibility for a mess that ultimately doomed the putative nomination of her successor, Susan Rice, currently the UN ambassador. That was a controversy over the attack, the deadly attack in the Libyan city of Benghazi, which resulted in the deaths of four Americans, including the U.S. ambassador, Christopher Stevens. Early reports, including reports spread by Ambassador Rice on American talk shows, had indicated that the killings were the result of protests against the inflammatory anti-Muslim video. And it turned out later, it turned out publicly later, that was not the case. Secretary Clinton ended up taking responsibility for that whole affair, since ambassadorships and ambassadors and embassies and consulates are apparently under her responsibility and under her jurisdiction. Meanwhile, her husband, the ever-present Bill Clinton, was the hit of the Democratic convention. His speech was the hit of the Democratic convention, and he actually spent 3 months on the road campaigning for President Obama. His reward on election night, President Obama thanked everybody he could think of. He couldn't think of Bill Clinton.
Clinton something. The State Department years.
Thanks for making the time to us. I mean, Madam Secretary.
No problem, Bill. I was between Syria meetings at the UN, so...
Kind of brings back memories, just you and me having dinner here.
Just watching myself sign my last name brings back memories, but yeah. This is always nice.
Good evening. Welcome to the Four Seasons.
Thanks.
Tonight's menu is based on autumn. Let me know if you have any questions.
Thanks.
My first question would have been, what season do you think we were expecting in mid-October?
Yeah, right. You know, you don't have to charm me. I already know you.
So, look, hon, I just thought we should celebrate the fact that we got something in common again.
Oh, namely?
We're both spending our time picking up poop for the big guy.
In a way.
I mean, I had to cancel a trip to Haiti so I could go do my speech blaming the voters for impatience about the economy.
Haiti? Still?
Mm-hmm. Donor to the foundation has plans for a project that could really help with the unemployment down there.
What's that?
A 5-star resort with 3 championship 18-hole golf courses. He's already got the name for it and everything. Resurrection Village, except Resurrection is pronounced like it's in French.
I get it. Well, maybe they can sell It Takes a Village in the gift shop.
You don't have to charm me either.
Got it. Well, but, so you made the speech?
First in a series. Mm. Americans are too impatient to understand how much this guy's accomplished. You know, we're a fast food nation, an ADHD society.
Test well?
It did okay. Of course, they don't test it with me reading it. You know, that'd be like hearing Larry King sing a Dylan. But, man, he's got you taking a bullet big time.
It's not the weirdest thing in the world for a cabinet secretary to step up and take responsibility for a mistake made at another level.
Hmm. Artfully phrased. What is weird is taking responsibility for a mistake made at a higher level.
I'm thinking about having the char.
The what?
The Arctic char.
Hey, might as well. Pretty soon the Arctic's going to be the next energy ocean.
I have to say, your writers are getting better and better.
Mm-hmm. But just how did that go down? Madam Secretary, blaming the CIA for the mess over the Libya attack isn't working. We need something new and fresh to blame. Any ideas?
What looks good to you?
You really don't want me to answer that question.
On the menu.
So my question is, which of us humiliated ourselves more? I'd say me, you know, for insulting the voters who put me in office twice, but that's just me.
You're right there. Look, Bill, I wouldn't be Secretary of State if it weren't for this guy.
That's right. You'd be president.
And you would be legally constrained from enjoying large and untraceable sources of income. So...
No, I love this guy. I'm just saying...
So have we made the choice yet?
Yeah, I think I was the most humiliated, but...
I'd come back.
And intel on the Benghazi attack was sketchy.
Hey, hon. George Bush skated on the CIA's back for 7 years. The CIA's there to be blamed. That's the price for getting to play all the really cool games.
I'm just saying that when there's no penalty attached to it, taking responsibility for a mistake on your watch can sometimes goose the gravitas number. It has.
So the CIA owes you one?
I've got a little book of who owes me.
Print is so not dead.
Would you like me to bring you a printed menu, sir?
No. The iPad's fine. Just give us another minute. You don't need this table, do you?
As a matter of fact, Mr. Moonves has it booked for 9.
And he's still president of something. We'll just be a minute.
Thank you, Madam Secretary.
Look, hon, neither of us is humiliated. If the big guy gets back in, it's 4 more years before you've got competition on the big money do-gooder circuit.
If you don't count Tony Blair. Touche.
Next time you give that speech blaming the voters, just... keep whispering to yourself, Davos, Davos, Davos. Okay?
Okay.
Youthful angst and middle-aged power. Together they add up to Clinton something, the State Department years.
And just very briefly at the end of this broadcast, some news from outside the bubble. We've heard all about the uproar in India involving the death of the young student who was brutally raped and killed ultimately by a gang. What we haven't heard is this from Global Post. Every major political party in India has fielded and continues to field candidates who themselves are facing criminal charges for rape, harassment, and other crimes against women. According to mandatory self-declarations filed by candidates with the Election Commission, India's leading political parties have offered tickets, that is, nominations, to 27 candidates accused of rape and 260 candidates facing charges for crimes against women, ranging from assault to harassment, just over the past 5 years. 2 members of the current parliament and 6 members of various state legislatures are facing rape charges. 36 others face charges for lesser crimes. And across the border... our friend Pakistan, even the world's most wanted terrorist, could not escape Pakistan's culture of bribery. Osama bin Laden's safe house in Pakistan's city, Abbottabad, was built after paying a bribe of roughly $512 to a revenue official in Pakistan, according to a media report in Times of India. The bribe was paid to the Patwari so that bin Laden could construct his 3-story hideout. Story for basis for... a new movie called Zero Dark 512 coming out soon. News from outside the bubble, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Here it is!
And there it goes. We'll be having some music very shortly. These predictions are so good, you should take me to the racetrack. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system here in Japan, not here, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet. 7.490 short wave. Really? Yeah. On the Mighty 104 in Berlin. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived at harryshearer.com and at kcrw.com. Whenever you want it. Really. Try it. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com and available as a free FREE podcast at kcrw.com. And be just like next year being absolutely as happy as this one. If you would agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, in exile and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Join the more than 78,000 followers of this broadcast on Twitter at The Harry Shearer, won't you? And everything in the store at harryshearer.com is yours for $5 and free shipping. Where you can also find the playlist of the music heard on this broadcast and the email address for this broadcast, harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Happy New Year from New Orleans.